Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting PFGWM. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
Good morning and welcome to Investing Simplified. Thank you for listening today, however you may be making us a part of your day. If you're listening on the podcast, we really appreciate that. If you're listening via Apple Podcasts or any of the other podcast platforms, we'd really appreciate it if you would subscribe and rate to our show. That's how we get boosted on the podcast. But I am Bo Caldwell, CFP, in here this morning with Kevin Stagio, Baker Colson, CPAs. Kevin, good morning.
Hello, Bo. Good morning.
And we received a text this morning from one Chuck Price that he decided the bed seemed like a better idea, I think, this morning than the show.
Something, yeah. I got the same text and I was like, oh, he beat me to it.
So Chuck's not going to be in this morning, but we do want to talk about the market and an update to the market like we normally do. If you looked at the weekend, you know, based on since the beginning of the year up until now, the S&P is up over 17%. The S&P 500 is. The Nasdaq is up over 23%. And the Dow Jones is up about 13%. So we've had a little bit of a move back towards what you'd expect, as opposed to what Chuck and I have been talking about over the last decade, where the slow-going Dow Jones has been outpacing the other two. And so far this year, since the major downturn, the other two market indices have gone up. But I want to talk about a little bit. I come across folks who ask, you know, what's the S&P doing? They listen to our show. They say, hey, the market is up 20%. And if you're using the NASDAQ as your market piece, and it is up 20%, but unless you're investing directly in an index fund or a fund that tracks the exact companies that's in the NASDAQ or in the S&P 500 or in the Dow Jones, you shouldn't expect to get that same exact return that those market indices provided. The Dow Jones, and a lot of people don't know this, is made up of only 30 stocks. There are only 30 companies that are inside that index, and the S&P 500 stocks, which makes sense, right? Because it's right there in the name. But that's the 500 biggest stocks, biggest companies here in the United States based on market capitalization. So you're not actually getting a view of what your investments might be unless you're inside that exact mutual fund or that exact index fund, because a lot of folks who are investing in the stock market, investing in equities, don't own those 500 specific stocks. So your return is going to be a little bit different. Additionally, if you're 65, if you're retired, if you have money that you're pulling out in the next year, you're probably only allocated maybe 50 to 60% of your portfolio into equity-like investments. And so if you're only 60% invested like the S&P 500, logically, you're not going to get the same return as the S&P 500. And the big thing is to make sure that when you're looking at comparing, you know, a lot of advisors will compare themselves to benchmarks. They'll compare themselves to a specific benchmark. Make sure you're comparing yourself to what's called a best fit benchmark. And what that means is when you're looking at your investments, make sure that what you're benchmarking against is against a similar aspect of investments. Because if you have a diversified portfolio, you probably have 15 to 20% of your investments invested internationally, which has done pretty poorly over the last couple of years. And so that's going to drag you down compared to the S&P 500. And unless you're exactly just in the S&P 500, it seems like a poor comparison. So what I always tell people is when you're comparing yourself to a benchmark, if you want to use a benchmark, make sure that it is what's called a blended benchmark. Ask your advisor, hey, is this a blended benchmark or a best fit comparison? The other option is, and the way that I think works a lot better for us as human beings, as investors, as people, is compare it to your plan. So when you set up a financial plan, there are certain assumptions that you make based on inflation and economic growth and returns on your investments. But the key is, if we've got a plan and we're expecting to need to get, for example, 4.5% to 5% returns throughout the next few years and then into our retirement and through retirement, that's what you need to be comparing yourself to. Because if you need to get 4.5% to 5% on average returns, that means that if you do have a 23% return, your advisor is doing something wrong because you have too much risk. Right now, you're taking too much risk, most likely, unless the S&P 500 is up 50 and you're only up 23, then you're taking the right amount of risk. But if your goal is to get 4 to 5%, the key is to stay on track with that 4 to 5%. So that means you should be hopefully getting less in the downside capture. And what downside capture means is the amount of the downside in the market that you're actually receiving. But you're also going to probably get less of the upside capture. Now, if you know that silver bullet and you have over the last 10 to 15 years gotten all of the market upside, none of the market downside, you need to call me because we'll work with you. We'll recommend some of our clients go and have you manage their money. However, I have not met a money manager. I've not met a person who has 100% of the time done that. So the goal is to try and keep you on track and on pace with your plan and what you're planning to do. And that kind of leads me into working with an advisor and how you should work with an advisor. Because we talked about this a little 2 weeks ago, the Advisor Alpha that Vanguard's white paper had put out, the value of having an advisor. And I had a caller call in and ask, is that value because your advisor is picking stocks are going to beat the market all the time? And if they say they are, I would advise you to run away. Because none of us knows what exactly is going to happen in the market. We can make predictions. We can make guesses, educated guesses. But we really can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. Chuck and I have a crystal ball that we keep in our office, and Chuck uses it to predict the market. And so far, he's done pretty well the last year and a half or so. But he didn't know exactly what was going to happen or when to get in. And that's why we rely on those professional money managers. We rely on the folks that do that. But they're not right every time. And I would advise you, when you have a bad quarter, if you have a bad quarter or a couple of bad months with your advisor or with your money manager, that's not just a reason to make a change or make a switch, because every manager has a bad quarter. In fact, the market just itself averages one out of every 4 years, you're going to lose money in your portfolio if you're investing in the market. That's a, rule of thumb average. So if a money manager has a bad quarter, I would say, unless they're doing something different in their investment philosophy than you expected, and unless they are consistently underperforming, then you need to give them at least 6 months, maybe a year, in order to prove their long-term strategy and their long-term success, because investing is a long-term process. You're not investing in the market. If you need that money in the next 6 months to a year, it should be in cash, because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We could have another December. And if you've got $100 for easy math and we have another December and now you have $76, you needed that $100 to pay your mortgage, or you needed that $100 to pay your bills, and now you only have $76. And as everyone knows, when you're investing in the market, you don't actually lose money until you sell. But if you need the money in the next 6 months, you might need to sell. So if the money is something that you're planning on taking in the next 6 months, that needs to be something that's really readily available in cash, if that makes sense. The other thing that to talk to your advisor about is your risk-adjusted return. And that's a term that a lot of people don't know or don't understand. There are measurements. There are, I'm going to make people fall asleep by talking about the math behind those measurements and the ratios, which is super boring. But what it is a measurement of how well you're performing relative to the amount of risk you're taking. So if you have a risk-adjusted return that's quite good, then you're comparing yourself apples to apples rather than apples to oranges. You look at your return And maybe you're getting 5%. Maybe you're up 5% so far this year, and you just heard me talk about the S&P 500 is up 17. So if you compare straight across the line, 5% to 17, it's not very good. Right? You are trailing. You're not doing a great job. But if your risk-adjusted return, if you're looking at, you're taking about 30% of the risk of the S&P 500 and you're getting about 30% of the return, that's pretty good. That's a risk-adjusted return that's right on line. Now, that all depends on your risk tolerance, that depends on your plan, that depends on how risky you want to be. And we've talked about before, if you're going to invest straight in the index, S&P 500 index, and hold on to it over time, you're going to be doing great. Now, the problem is, are you able to hold on to it when the market goes down 20% in a month? Or are you able to hold on to it when the market continues to go down and is down 50% peak to trough like it was during the Great Recession? Now, if you can, then you're going to have a good job. Or if you feel like you can time the market perfectly, I wouldn't suggest it, but maybe you can, then being in that S&P 500 and comparing yourself to that is good. But if you're comparing yourself on a risk-adjusted basis, then most of the time you're going to save on the downside. And so the downside is going to be protecting. You're going to have less that you have to catch up, and you're going to maybe miss out on upside when the market's straight up. But we're not trying to take all the risk of the market. So it gives you a more accurate description of how your performance has been, how you're doing, and how your advisor is doing. And if they're not doing a good job, we tell our clients all the time, if we're not doing a good enough job, you should fire us. That's absolutely the case. You should absolutely have an advisor that you trust is doing the right thing for you and is doing a good enough job. And part of our job is to make sure that the money managers that are handling your money are doing a good job, because we should fire them if they're not doing a good enough job. So hopefully that makes a lot of sense. I just wanted to kind of, it's been on my soapbox. I've been having so many people that I talk to about that are specifically looking at the market being straight up and the market being straight up. And are you, you know, my question is always, are you invested directly in the market? The other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit to start is we've had a couple people that have called in and asked about specific socially responsible investing or Christian mutual funds. So we, you know, because we are broadcast on AM 860. And they've asked about specific funds regarding those. There are a couple of fund families. I promised that I would come back with a couple of options. The big caveat is there's no thing that's right for everybody. I'm not making a recommendation to go into these funds, but I was asked to find some funds out there that do this sort of investing. And one of them is called a group of mutual funds called the Calvert Mutual Funds. You can look that up, C-A-L-V-E-R-T. They have primarily made their bank in that socially responsible funds, the alcohol, tobacco, firearm funds. You know, that's a big thing. Or they're looking at no fracking and different socially responsible things. So folks are interested in those. That's a fun family to check out. The other one that's done really well, and I have had a lot of success with, is the ARIS family of mutual funds. It's A-R-I-S. And they have both socially responsible, but also particularly, and I can't remember the terminology they use right now, but it is a family funds that Christian values investing. And so if that's something you're interested in, make sure you can check out ARIS Mutual Funds or Calvert Mutual Funds. So we're going to take a quick break here. Thanks for listening to my soapbox, Kevin. I appreciate it. But we're going to come back with the tax investigator. Kevin's going to cover his tax topics that he has for the day. And so be ready with a pencil and a pen or a piece of paper, and we'll get you saving some money on your taxes. Thanks for listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and it's good to be back in the saddle again after missing a couple months. But what makes our show run is your questions. I'd rather answer what's on your mind than rattle on about what's interesting to me, and it's probably not interesting to you, but 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. We did get one email here recently regarding a particular topic, and I'll talk a little bit about that. HSAs, just kind of some small details on that, a little here and there, and maybe you can see if that is something that you would be interested in. HSA is health savings account. There's a lot of options that are out there in many different things to get involved in regarding retirement, regarding investments, regarding health insurance, regarding all sorts of stuff. Regarding 520, you know, education 529 plans. I know Chuck has his opinions on those and various.
Wait, Chuck has opinions?
No. I'm sorry, I should have said that. Yes, but my opinion on HSAs is a pretty good product. I if it suits your situation, if it fits your situation, or if you can organize your situation in such a way that you can get involved in an HSA, I think it's a pretty good thing. Probably for most employees, having health coverage at work is the number one option, the best thing. It's paid for. It's tax-free to you. Hopefully, it's good coverage and not, you know, something disastrous. But even if it's, with health premiums and the costs that they are anymore, if you're not offered good health insurance that suits your situation, potentially you can negotiate something where you can get involved in an HSA. Particularly, I think some of the first things to look at is HSA. The first thing that comes to mind is, are you a healthy individual? Does a high deductible health insurance plan work for you? And, you know, so if you're younger and in good health, you've got good genes, that's a good start to really start considering an HSA, and then start moving into the financial side. Basically, what it is you have a high deductible health plan that health insurance plan, and then the health savings account is a brother to that plan. It works in conjunction with the high deductible health plan, and basically it allows you to contribute into this savings account, take a current tax deduction for it, and then when you need to pay some of that high deductible, some of those costs that might come at you, you can use the HSA tax-free. It's been invested with those who know what to do with money.
Right, one can hope.
Exactly, yes. Hopefully at 23% return, that's what I gathered from you. That's the only thing I gathered from your last segment.
That's all you heard.
If you're not giving me 23%, you're doing a bad job. I'm kidding. So it's a. I think it's a pretty good thing to look at and get involved in. When you make the HSA contribution, you don't have to be an employee or an employer. You don't have to have earned income. Anybody can get involved. Mm. And by anybody, I should say any qualified individual. Yes, there's some things. For example, you can't be on Medicare and have an HSA account. You're already covered, so you don't fit the bill of having a high deductible health plan, even if you go out and purchase one, which I'm not sure why you do. But
right.
There's people who know more about that stuff than I do. One of the features I love about the HSA is so especially for a younger person, well, first off, let me say the annual contribution amounts for 2019 for a single person, a single plan is $3,500. and for a family at $7,000. So we'll just talk family plan. You can put $7,000 into this HSA, get a current tax deduction on that, and that just sits in there and waits until you need it. Yes, there's penalties if you draw it out for non-medical purposes, but one of the things I love about the HSA is, say you put this money in year after year and you're not using it, you're getting the current tax deduction. By the time you reach age 65, you basically convert that over into it's basically an IRA,
right, and
without RMD stipulations. So, you know, here you're able to put a fair amount in, and if you don't use it for medical and it's been invested in the market for the long term and you hit age 65, obviously a little penalty at IRAs, it's 59 and a half before you're penalty free, but for an HSA at 65, a little bit later. But boy, oh boy, that's not a bad thing to look at. And you can start pulling out for non-medical purposes.
And as far as I know, you can, and correct me if I'm wrong, with the HSA, you can use medical purposes, can be paying your premiums for your Medicare, if you're looking at your Medicare Advantage, your Medigap policy, or if you're just prior to retirement or prior to age 65, say you're not on Medicare yet, mm-hmm, but now you can use it to pay your health insurance premiums, right, as far as I know.
I believe so. There's a specific set of rules on what those can be used for. Mm-hmm. I leave that to the insurance experts,
right,
and stuff. But absolutely, when you look at the rules, you look how it plays out, there's definitely some scenarios that are very beneficial. So that's all I've got on HSAs.
So if people have questions about HSAs, you can set those up. Most places where you do your investments, like Chuck said, you can do it with an investment account where you can invest it in the market. You can also do it. There are several credit unions around here that I know that will help you set it up if you're more comfortable thinking, okay, this is my medical costs. I want it to be in, you know, in safe, in FDIC insured investments, then you can set those up with most credit unions will help you set that HSA up. And just like an IRA that you can do at a bank or at a credit union, the HSA can be set up, and your qualifications, like Kevin said, you need to have a high deductible health plan, right? And then you need to be able to not be on Medicaid or Medicare, so you're not contributing to it. But if you're, there's no income requirements, it's just got to be on a high deductible health plan. That's pretty sweet.
Correct. And, you know, it helps to have some income to utilize the
deduction,
exactly,
right? Well, otherwise, what are you getting the deduction for? But that's a great option. You know, a lot of the times that I've come across those have been on with folks that make a lot of money. And so they are covered by their corporate plan, their plan at work. They're not able to deduct their IRA contributions anymore because they're above that. You know, they've phased out of the deductible IRA contributions, and $7,000 is a very similar number to the current IRA contribution limit.
Sure.
But you can write off a certain amount if they were looking for a tax deduction. They use that. They call, you know, I've heard it called the medical IRA. I've heard it called the, you know, different things like that, but it's a very similar idea. It gives you a tax deductible deposit. And then, you know, if you're younger and you have kids, or, I mean, we all have medical expenses, right? I mean, there's even, especially if you're on a high deductible health plan, but, you know, you're going to go in for things if, you know, I have three little kids. So I, you know, the plan is I'm going to be spending some time at the ER in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, if they're anything like me, you know, just because they're breaking arms or
stitches and bones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yep.
And so you have something that's tax deductible, which, depending on your effective tax rate, means that basically you're saving 25-30% on those medical costs because you're getting that pre-tax money put in there.
That's right. And another word for a high deductible health plan is it's a catastrophic health plan, because usually it's making you pay the first $7,000, $7,500. I forget what the limits are. It's in there somewhere. In fact, I probably have them. Oh, for a family, it's the minimum annual deductible is $2,700. For 2018, I'm sure it's gone up a little bit. And then the maximum annual deductible and out-of-pocket is $13,000. So
yep,
you could, you know, you're on the hook for some of it, but that's why this money goes into the account to help pay for some of that. One clarification is you can't be covered under any other health plan. This has to be the one plan. You can't be under a non-high deductible Now we're getting into double negatives.
Well, so, and I think, so it sounds to me like you could, if you have a married couple and let's say the one spouse is covered under a good health plan at work, but they're not enrolling their other spouse in that plan, the other spouse goes maybe on the exchange and gets a high deductible plan because the other one's healthier, or gets a high deductible option under the work plan, then one would think that that spouse could do a contribution, at least the $3,500, you said, right?
Exactly. If you're covered under your spouse's plan, you're toast. But if that cost is too expensive, maybe maybe only the spouse is covered, and to add the other spouse
costs you money.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might want to look at something like this.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, if we can save money on taxes, I'm all about that.
Right? That's right.
And if I can, you know, help folks save more for retirement, if you think about, so it's worth reiterating with the HSA, that's money that's available after you turn 65 for other retirement expenses. But the number one thing that we talk about that's going to increase in cost over people's lifetime is their medical costs, yeah. Right? That's the one thing that, as we all get older, nobody gets out of this alive, right? And we all degenerate at different rates, but we all degenerate over time. So you're going to need to see the doctor. There's going to be medical expenses that come up. And to be able to have pre-tax money that we can utilize to pay for those things is huge.
That's right. And another benefit to this is you don't have to make the maximum contribution every year. You can only put in only what you want to put in, mm-hmm. or what you want to deduct. You can do up to $7,000, but things are going good, maybe you've put in $7,000 a year for 4 years and you got $28,000 plus your 23% return. that's a pretty fat fund for mm-hmm. Medical expenses. Maybe you want to use your money to buy that Mexican villa that you've always been wanting for your vacation home, then you don't have to fund it every year. So it's just whatever you want to put in. So it's a pretty flexible, pretty good option.
Yeah, sounds that I have gotten questions about that a good deal, over the last few years as people kind of read about them or see, see mm-hmm. about them. So
yeah.
I mean, it's a good option that's out there.
Yep, absolutely. And I think one of the other benefits also is, and I jotted it down here, and it has now escaped me.
We had to put the caveat out there that we were both up late watching the Blazer game, which I think a lot of people were probably doing as well. We haven't gotten anybody calling in. Probably everybody's sleeping today.
Exactly. Right? That was quite the game. Yep. It cut into my my segment prep time, shall we say, the radio show, and it was well worth it.
Yeah, it cut into my beauty sleep, which Lord knows I need lots of help. So with that, we're going to take another break here. We'll be back to talk a little bit more about tax saving options. We're going to talk some more about portfolio options. But give us a call. Ask your question. Go on investingsimplifiedradio.com. Call us at 503-417-9595. Let us know. Kevin and I are happy to talk at you, but we'd rather cover topics that are keeping you up at night. Thank you for listening to Investing Simplified.
Investing Simplified. Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future, and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Thank you for listening to Investing Simplified. Thanks for making us a part of your day. Again, if you have that question that's been keeping you up at night, now's the time to call 503-417-9595. There's no bad question, no stupid question about your money, about your taxes, about your estate planning. We do have a caller on the line. Looks like Mary has a question. Good morning, Mary.
Yeah. Good morning. Just in general, what services does your Beaverton location provide? I think you have a new Beaverton location.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a good question. It's the same as our Eastside location. Right now, we don't have it fully staffed, so we're only doing appointments over there. So unfortunately, we don't have a walk-in services there because we just don't have somebody there all the time unless we're meeting with folks. But we do have everything that we do on the east side, we do on the west side. We just wanted to have a location that's easier for folks to get to, so making that travel time easier. But everything that we do, from your investment planning to estate planning to your financial planning, all that stuff we do on that west side as well.
Okay, thanks.
You betcha. Yeah, if you'd like an appointment on our west side location with Chuck or I, it's 503-253-3000. 503-253-3000. You also can call us at 877-50-PRICE. That's 877, not 800-50-PRICE, because that's The Price is Right. So 877-50-PRICE is us. We do have a caller online, Barry, who has a tariffs question. Good morning, Barry.
Oh, hi. So, well, I just want to let you know I watched the game last night, but I still got up to
show. Well, I appreciate
that. I like
that.
Your show. I look forward to it every Saturday morning before I start my day. Anyway, no, it was a great game. But where are we at as far as the tariffs? Because a couple of my – I have three businesses, and two of them are affected by these tariffs because of the uncertainty. A lot of my suppliers are ordering smaller quantities, and they're – also, they're putting no pricing until it's landed in this country. But wasn't there a time limit of like 90 days set on this thing? Where are we at as far as this?
You know, I do recall that there was a time limit, at least not a time limit like a hard deadline, but a thing where they said, hey, we want to make sure that we get this done. As far as I know, and all the stuff, everything that I've read, both from, the left-leaning political stuff and the right-leaning political stuff that gets posted online. From what I understand, they both sides believe they're very close to getting a deal done that they hope to be beneficial for both sides. I don't know, without knowing what's going on in those actual negotiations, what's happening. I know that most of the economists that I follow are high on them getting a deal done. They're very positive about the way that the talks have gone, and I know that. That's everything that I've read has been that it's been a very positive outlook for getting something done where it's not going to be hurting companies like yours. I know there are other companies like Tesla that's getting real hurt by the tariffs. The companies that import a lot of their materials, particularly from China, and in that rare earth imports and those sort of things too. So as far as I know, that the plan is that they've been working, and it should be getting taken care of or getting finished up here soon. I don't know about the 90-day limit, but from everything I've read, they're pretty close to getting a deal done.
Well, right now, my feeling is this. Once they assign tariffs to certain industries like cars and stuff, it's going to slow up the purchasing of them. Mm-hmm. If they're going to go up. I've read that it could go up $2,000-$3,000 a car.
Right.
Once tariffs are assigned to them.
Yeah, and certainly if the price goes up, if prices go up, that makes consumer spending slows down a little bit. Luckily for us, the consumer spending, the reports of consumer spending have been that it has been drastically increasing and it's been doing really well over this. So maybe that gives us a little buffer if we have a little downturn in consumer spending based on prices. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. If those prices go up, and logically, right, if the cost of producing your product, the cost of goods sold is the accounting term that they use. Kevin will like that I use that term. But if that goes up, then logically, the price of your product is going to go up because you want to keep your same margin, your same profit level. So,
oh, sure. And then who really suffers is consumer.
Right.
I mean, not
absolutely
suffering, but we're the ones, when you go to buy a new car or new whatever, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah,
well,
totally. Yeah,
well, thank you.
You betcha. Thanks for listening, Barry. Thanks for giving us a call. We have a couple more folks on the line. So, Bruce, you've been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Bruce. Good morning.
Hi. You've talked about couples. Married couples with HSAs, what if you're a single male, single female, with a high deductible plan covered at work? Can you utilize an HSA if you're in that category?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We just talked on the married thresholds. But yes, a single plan and single contribution limit for 2019 is
3,500, I think you said, right?
3,500. And your employer can contribute into your HSA, which is always a good thing. So absolutely, that's available to you.
Okay. Thank you. That answers it.
You betcha. Good question, Bruce. Thanks for calling. Drive safe.
And just to follow up. Just to follow up on that, one of the things that sometimes people do is they negotiate, especially with your smaller employers,
Sure. You
negotiate with maybe you don't like the insurance coverage, and so you negotiate to have an HSA plan and have them contribute into your HSA as opposed to buying your insurance, and it's a win-win.
So, and is he, so if he's going and talking to his employer about that, is that a deduction for the employer? It's not a taxable income for him.
Exactly.
Right? So if you heard that, Bruce, if you have that high deductible health plan and you're talking to your employer about, hey, maybe they'll be willing to contribute at least some to your HSA, they get to write that off. They get to deduct that from their taxable income, and you get to have it in there without having to pay taxes on it coming out tax-free as long as you utilize it properly.
Great. Thank you.
You betcha. Great question. So we also have Ron on the line. So, Ron, you're on with us with a question about municipal bonds.
Yeah. Several years ago, I learned about the stock market, and with Enron, I lost everything.
Oof.
And so I went into real estate, and some of my earlier investments, rental properties are depreciating out now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of going into like tax-free municipal bonds. I'm kind of a little bit allergic to paying taxes. I've got Kathy over on Division is doing my taxes at your office over on Division.
Oh, sure.
So anyway, she takes care of my taxes every year and does a really good job. So I found out about her, via this program, and I try to listen every weekend to see what's going on. But the thing is, I'm getting to the point. I invested in a lot of at the time they seemed like nitwit investments, but my smallest buildable parcel right now went up $48,000 in tax, taxable purposes. So
Sure. They're
trying to tax me out of everything, and I'm getting to the point where I'm going to have to start turning loose, like one property a year and just take the hit, I guess, on capital gains, do my best on the long-term capital gains. But what I'm interested in getting into is tax-free municipal bonds so that I just don't have to give everything away to the government,
That makes sense. And do you live in Oregon or in Washington?
Oregon.
So you're going to get, if you get Oregon, you can get Oregon tax-free bonds if they're Oregon municipal bonds. And Oregon municipal bonds, I'm going to tell you, are really hard to find if you're talking to a broker or talking to, because they get bought up. It's a good thing that they're really hard to find because Oregon has a really good reputation. They're highly rated as being paid. They default even less than most. If you're looking at municipal bonds that are AAA rated, they default less than 1% of the time. And a default means that they miss, if they're a day late on a payment, that's technically a default. So Oregon municipal bonds, the AAA rated municipal bonds are a really good way to get some tax-free income. The caveat's going to be if you get municipal bonds from other states, you're still going to have Oregon income tax because they're not going to have federal income tax. You can also be subject to the thing called the alternative minimum tax if you have, and I can let Kevin speak a little more about AMT, but if you have a certain amount of income and or those bonds are investing in, they're called what are called revenue bonds rather than general obligation bonds. So if they're not a city putting it out, if it's like Portland Airport is putting out a bond, still a municipal bond, but because it's a revenue generating bond, it could generate an AMT situation. And I'll let Kevin talk a little bit about that caveat.
Don't have to worry about AMT with the new tax law changes unless you're over about $1 million or so.
Oh, well, then there you go. Forget I said that.
Yeah.
But that's good news about the new tax law.
Well, I'm sure Ron's over $1 million.
He might.
All of our callers are.
Yeah, everybody's making $1 million a
that's
year,
right?
But yeah, the other option, Ron, and I'd tell you to look into it and think about it, is laddering treasury bonds or laddering treasury bills. So you can get... That's double, that's tax-free income because you're getting treasuries from the U.S. government technically considered, you know, the safest investment. Now, it still does fluctuate in value, but that's a way to get some income that you may not be paying taxes on as well. If you're thinking about some tax-free income, treasury bonds are pretty good too. The issue that I have with investing in bonds is a lot of people have to do it in bond funds. And the only issue with bond funds is when the interest rates go up, the price on the bonds goes down because that's how it works. And if people are redeeming their funds, because a mutual fund has to be stand ready to let you buy your shares back from you if you want to redeem them, they have to sometimes sell those bonds at a loss in order to meet redemptions. So that's the only caveat with a bond fund. If you can find individual bonds that are highly rated, that are paying that tax-free income, that might be a good spot for you to kind of trade out your rental income for some tax-free income.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I've got a lot of properties that are located within urban growth boundaries that are buildable. Sure. I'm trying to convert some of them now from duplex legal lots to apartments. I was going to build some apartments maybe. The thing is, like I said, I got burnt out on this Enron deal years ago. I literally lost everything. And so I just, to me, the stock market is just somebody else playing cards with my money. And, you know, the only thing I really had control over was buying land and hanging on to it until it appreciated in value. And now it's just gone berserk.
Sure.
So anyway, okay, well, thank you very much. I'll get a hold of Chuck then and see, you know, how we can arrange this so I can get a hold of somebody that I can buy tax-free municipal bonds from.
Sure. Sounds like a plan.
Thank you very much for the information. Have a great day.
Yeah, you betcha. Thanks for listening.
And just to follow up on that, Ron might be in a good place to look at some more advanced planning, tax planning and or investment options. You know, Bo, you and I had discussed back when we kind of first met a kind of advanced tax planning technique where if you have a lot of capital gains, where you would form another trust,
right.
Sell your property to the trust, then that trust sells the property, makes the investments, but your tax hit is spread out over an installment sale from an entity that you own.
Right.
So potentially there's some options there, but that's, again, advanced tax planning and investment planning and should be, you know, looked at. You know, and especially depending on how long Ron wants to hold
his current properties. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing about the deferred sales trust that we talked about is you can turn right around and invest it back in real estate property if you wanted inside your trust. The trust can, you can direct it to invest however you want. Whether they can invest in municipal bonds if you wanted to. You know, there's ways to spread that out and build that out. That's the key to working with a tax professional and a financial professional.
That's right. And the other two things I'd look at, it would be potentially opportunity zone. Maybe not. That has to be a specific situation. And then your estate plan should also dovetail into all of this when you're talking getting rid of income taxes and stuff. And depending on how much cash he wants while he's still alive.
Yeah, totally. So we've got a caller on the line, Mark, who has an IRA conversion question. Good morning, Mark.
Yes, good morning. I believe that I know everything involved in converting a traditional IRA to a Roth.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see if there's anything I'm missing, any consideration or factor or cost that I'm missing. Okay.
Sure. Well, without asking everything that you know about it, mainly the key consideration from a tax perspective is just looking at your potential tax bracket that it's going to put you into to make the conversion.
Yes.
And, you know, from a tax perspective, that's kind of the main thing we look at. Investment really decisions really, I think, drive the decision more than the tax aspect.
And to a certain extent, the other thing that people don't the one thing that I see get overlooked the most is if you have deductible and non-deductible IRA contributions, whether that's in your IRA or a SEP or a simple IRA, any type of IRA that can kind of junk the water up a little bit if you have some non-deductible and some deductible contributions inside your IRA. That it's still doable, but it just adds a lot of work for your CPA. So those are the two big the big worries that I have in there, the things that most people miss.
Well, it's just a traditional IRA, and I would be converting incrementally over 4 years' time, incurring a big tax hit each of those 4 years. I have additional funds available to pay the tax outside of the IRA so that I could maximize the amount going into the Roth conversion. And in fact, thinking of moving out of Oregon, that would save me maybe $60,000 over 4 years' time.
Yeah.
To move out of Oregon to a state without an income tax.
Totally.
So, and then starting Social Security, claiming Social Security at the end of all of the Roth conversion, because then I'll have tax-free retirement income that will not impact at all the Social Security payouts I receive.
Right. You know,
so that's kind of the plan, and I've laid it out in a spreadsheet comparing the painful tax hit of 4 years versus the break-even point, which would be in about 10 years' time. And it's very attractive to have my retirement nest egg in that Roth IRA. So
absolutely.
The question is, am I missing anything? Is there something I'm not?
Doesn't, you know, to me, it sounds like we need to have you on as a contributor. You just explained exactly why doing the conversion and spreading it out over the 4 years is huge. No, it sounds like you've got, I mean, without seeing the specific situation, neither Kevin or I can see any bogeys on your radar.
The only thing I see you missing is a mint julep in your hand. that's a excellent strategy. Taking care of all of this before you're claiming Social Security, so potentially your Social Security may not be taxable
as much. Taxable,
exactly. Yeah. So great plan. Very good.
All right. And this is given current tax rates, which will likely go up. So it's probably a better choice over the long run if taxes go up.
I think so. Yeah, especially then it gives you that flexibility once you're having Social Security and to take extra money out to do anything you want to do with that money. It's not going to hurt your taxability on your Social Security or make your Medicare premiums go up.
Right.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right. So again, to have my savings in a Roth, that would affect my Medicare premiums?
No, just your taxable income. So if the same with Social Security, if you have higher, so you're the plan that you have of doing it so that it's done by the time you start taking Social Security, and then that's another benefit to the way you're doing it.
All right, so I will have low taxable income.
Correct.
If any taxable income.
Yeah,
for the rest
exactly.
of my life.
Exactly.
All right. Great.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the question. We do have Lincoln. Thank you for your patience, Lincoln. You had a tax question for Kevin?
Yeah, I have a $6,500 Oregon tax bill, and I paid $3,000 of it. How much trouble am I in for not paying the full thing?
Yeah,
obviously, I'm going to have to pay the rest of it. But.
Sure. Not too much trouble. I would have you gotten the first notice from them stating the balance due?
Not that I know of, no. I mean, obviously, we knew what the bill was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So you can go on to Revenue Online, Oregon Revenue. I'll get you the exact website. The Oregon website is an excellent website. They have done for a government agency, they have done an A-plus job with their website, and you can enter into a 12-month, up to 12-month agreement to pay that off. And that's the way to do it. Basically, once they know you owe, they'll send you a notice. You can wait for that notice, or you can preempt it and jump on the website and fill out. They've got a link there that basically says, make my payment. What if I can't pay at all? And up to 12 months, you can spread out your $3,000 to pay it off. They'll knock you for interest and late payment penalty, which is, you know, a couple percents, you know, up to maybe 5% if you drag it out too long. But so long as they know you're addressing it, and especially entering into that agreement, then they know you've addressed it and are moving forward. Not a bad thing.
All right, cool. Thank you very much. That's what I needed to know.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Lincoln. Thanks for listening. That was a great call. A good question about... So, Kevin, that brings up... I've talked to a couple people about this with the new tax law and with the under-withholding that has happened to folks. From what I understood, the IRS has kind of put out there that if you are... underpaying, but you hit the, there's a certain threshold that you know, if you've been within 80% of what you were supposed to pay, they're not going to penalize you. Is that been your experience? Or
That's exactly right. Usually you need to owe $1,000 or less to avoid any underpayment penalty. In this particular year, because of the adjustments to the withholding tables, they said if you paid up to 80% of your liability, then there is a waiver of that penalty. And we've done that with several of our clients just as a routine course of having them pay less taxes. So that's something to look at if you owe. So yes, it's a revenue online, Oregon.gov, revenue online. And that's Lincoln, where you can go to get that set up.
Perfect. They're not going to – the penalties, even if you're underpaid a lot, the penalty's not huge, right? I mean, it's a penalty, but it's not that huge. As long as you pay it, the big caveat I want to put out there, because I talk to clients about this who are self-employed or who have, you know, either a Schedule C or they're, you know, they own their own company, and a lot of people – think that with their filing their extensions with their CPA, and they say, well, I filed an extension. You still have to pay the taxes by April 15th, even if you're filing an extension, or you will have an underpayment penalty.
That's right. Late payment penalty. Yeah, yeah. Yep, exactly right. Yeah. And just to follow up on this, on the federal side, it's actually even quite a bit more lenient than Oregon in terms of making an installment agreement. If you owe less than $25,000, you can pretty well stipulate your terms of repayment of how much you want to pay a month, and they'll accept it even if it's over 12 months. I don't recommend it because they're making good interest at probably 4 or 5, maybe it's up to 5% now at this point. But anyway, both Oregon and IRS have installment agreements. I usually, when a text a client has a balance dues, both Oregon and federal, I tend to say, pay Oregon off first and then work on federal.
Okay.
That's generally, but not always the case.
Sure. That makes sense to me, especially if they're more lenient about, you know, about the repayment plans or about putting
the terms. Yeah. Or
the
longer
terms in. Yeah. Well, I don't like to loan the government money if I can help it. You know, they don't. We've talked about that a lot on the show. Is I don't mind paying my fair share of taxes. I'd prefer if they use the money better. You know, I prefer if they were made better use of the money. But I particularly don't want to loan them any money and have them not pay interest on it. I mean, if I'm buying treasuries like we talked about with the caller in there before, then sure, I'll loan them the money. They're paying me good interest, tax free interest, great. But I don't want to give them an interest free loan, especially when they're not doing what I want with the funds.
That's right. Here's a way you can invest in U.S. Treasuries, quote, U.S. Treasuries. You file a tax return, and this came from our tax school, and of course, it's not ethical, but it was given as an example. You file a tax return that overstates how much you owe, and then 2 years later, you amend to get that back, and here you've made 5% interest from the U.S. government. But you have knowingly filed a false tax return, so maybe you don't want to do that.
Yeah, right. So probably not. So yeah. we're guaranteeing. Man, you have been just running roughshod. You're guaranteeing 23%
that's right.
return. Now you're telling people to
fraudulent tax returns.
Goodness,
that's right.
Goodness.
That's why people tune in.
They're going to hear all the good stuff. That's funny. Well, so we got just about a minute here left, folks, but I thank you for listening today. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for your phone calls. Those were great questions, great topics to cover, and we want to make sure we're covering topics that are relevant to you. If you want to get a hold of myself or Chuck, you can call us at 503-253-3000. You can send us an email at ask@pfgwm.com. Send us your text at investingsimplifiedradio.com. We'll try to answer any questions that you have. Feel free to give our office a call. Come in and see us. We do have a couple of books available if you'd like to take them with you. Kevin, how do people get a hold of you?
We're at 503-666-5569 and on the web at baker-colson.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening today. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Be safe out there. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we can coax Chuck out of his cave to come join us. We will have an estate attorney on coming up soon as well for your estate planning questions. This has been Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.